So, Ethan, I know I asked you this last episode, but did you get anything good for Christmas? Maybe some late Christmas presents or anything?
I did get one thing in the mail, you know.
Oh, you did? You mind sharing it
Yeah.
with the podcast community?
Yeah, sure. So I didn't know who it was from. So I opened it and turns out it was a Yankees shirt. And I thought,
Oh,
gee,
you don't say.
I wonder who could have sent me this. And Brian was the only person that came to mind.
Well, I'm just getting you ready for this summer when I beat you in fantasy biathlon and you got to come to Yankee Stadium wearing some Yankees gear. So just wanted to make sure you're looking good.
I'm gonna make a comeback, so I'm gonna have to send you something so that you're ready when I come back and beat you.
All right. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we're back with Brian and Ethan's Biathlon podcast after what might be the best weekend of biathlon racing this season by far, and maybe in the last couple of years. I mean, we'll dive into it. But first of all, I just want to give a huge shout out to everyone who left a comment in the YouTube comment section after last podcast. Definitely had a good conversation going there, and it's always fun to keep the conversation going. You can see what other biathlon fans are thinking about the season, think about what's going on. So yeah, I just want to give a shout out to our fans there because that was pretty fun. But yeah, we're back with the pod. Ethan, what do you think about this? First impressions right off the bat, what do you think about this weekend's biathlon racing?
It was super fun to watch. I mean, every race was, on the edge of your seat, exciting, and starting the weekend off with the relays, especially being an American, watching the American men's team do so well at the beginning of the relay was, started the weekend off on the right foot, and it just was exciting from there the rest of the way.
Yeah, and I think one thing that you also mentioned right before we started recording was also it felt like winter in Ruhpolding. Like it seemed like a winter event and the crowd turned out. It was just, I don't know, just overall, it was just a great, great weekend of biathlon. All right, so we're going to start right off the bat with the pursuit races because those were absolutely incredible. I'm not going to worry too much about spoilers or anything here because if you're listening to this podcast, chances are you've probably already watched the races. If you haven't watched these races yet, I highly encourage you to go back and watch them. But let's just assume that all our listeners have watched the races, they got all the excitement, and now they're just here to hear the recap and our thoughts on the races. But wow. I mean, first of all, the women's race, in my opinion, even if that was the only race, and then the men's race was, yeah, Christensen goes, bib one, finishes first, whatever. Like, just that women's race alone was an awesome event. I mean, three ladies still fighting, or three women still fighting for the win in the last lap after the last shooting. Super exciting. And then I was too excited to go back to sleep because that race happened at like 4:30 in the morning in my time. Too excited to go back to sleep. Scrolled Instagram for an hour. Then I watched the men's race and I didn't even need coffee this morning or that morning because I was just so excited with how things went. But how did you experience the races, Ethan?
Well, unfortunately, I slept through the women's race, but watched it after. But what a race that was! I mean, we've talked about like every podcast how close the women's field is and how exciting, every race is because you never know who's going to win. And this race just gave you all of, kind of like summed up the whole women's World Cup biathlon season. One race, it was super exciting at the top. It was, after the podium, it was all the times are still incredibly close. The shooting standard was, for the most part, really high at a competitive level with across, the whole board except for a couple, fours and fives up in the top 15 or so. But
Really, the only two
our
people
race was
who
just
had
so fun.
terrible range, yeah, they're really the only two people who had terrible range days were Elvira Oiberg and Julia Simon. And let's see, Simon had five misses, Oiberg had five misses. Everyone else, Lampitch had seven, but what do you expect? Everyone else, yeah, ones, twos, zeros. Justine with a four. Unfortunately, everyone I chose for my fantasy team that day, but super exciting. And it's really cool. Like when I'm looking at the top 10 here, I think of the top 10, Arnkilev and Brorson are the only two that aren't in the top 10 overall. That's just really quick math off the top of my head here. Don't quote me on that, but all the favorites showed up for this race, with the exception of our Elvira Oyberg, who came in like 18th, and Julius Simon, who came in 13th. But everyone else, all the favorites were there in the fight. Super exciting. And I do want to give like a shout out. Maybe we can kind of go in depth here with Arnkilev, because like I mean you're up against Tandervold and Vitozzi. Even on like the fourth lap, I don't think anyone really had Arnkilev staying with them and you know, podiuming here, especially with like Lou Jeanmonod and some of these other really good athletes behind her. But she shot clean, went zeros all the way across the board, and moved up from 11th to 3rd. So really awesome performance for her.
Mm-hmm. I think it's, looking at the results, it seems like there was a lot of athletes that climbed up the rankings higher than we see usually. Like Arnkilev was 11th, finishing 3rd. Lena Hecki-Gross, bib 17, finishing 5th. Hanna Oyberg coming from 27th. Marketa Davidova from bib 46, finishing 11th, shooting clean.
She had the best isolated pursuit on the day, and Arnkilev was 2nd.
Mm-hmm. I think always having races like that where people are climbing, but the people at the top aren't like falling too far, you know, always makes the race that much more exciting. And it was kind of, this pursuit had everything you could have asked for in a biathlon pursuit, I'd say.
Yeah. Juni, just for some perspective here, Juni Arnkilev is shooting 87% right now on the season, and her standing and prone are really like pretty much the same thing. So that's not elite, but it's definitely better than like the standard shooter. So for her to go zeros in a four stage race is awesome. And then last year on the IBU Cup, she was shooting even 84%. So she's definitely overperformed in this race. Looking like she only, that's the first time she's ever cleaned a four stage race. Ever, because not even on the IBU Cup had she ever cleaned a four stage race. So that was her first time going for 20 for 20 on the, in biathlon period. So really cool for her. And then, yeah, with her ski speed was able to keep her up there and competitive, 9th ski time. Juni Arnkilev, you know, she's a great, obviously, addition to the team with Knoten and trying to think who else is even on Fem Steinvik. No, she's not even there this year. Just really great addition to the team for Norway and sort of the unsung hero a little bit, because I feel like Knoten, while she's doing well, she's not really filling that gap that I think a lot of Norwegian female fans sort of expected. You know, I think a lot of people expected Tandervold and Knoten to be like 1-2, but Juni Arnkilev is really stepping up for them.
It's good to see a younger athlete too kind of taking that place, where it gives you a good feeling for the future.
Yeah, Knoten is currently ranked 8th, and Arnkilev is 11th after this awesome weekend. And Arnkilev just jumped up 3 spots in the standings with that podium. So, and that's her 2nd podium of her career on the World Cup. She got 3rd place earlier this season. I think it was at Östersund or something. But you don't see that dominance on the women's side from Norway like you do on the men's side. But I mean, if Knoten can have, you know, good racing, Tandervold can continue to be that strong number one, and Arnkilev can step up, then they just need like either Janssen, Skogen. I heard Ida Lien is making her way back to the World Cup this next weekend. They really need like that fourth person to step up just a little bit, and suddenly I think they are real contenders against France for the Nations Cup on the women's side. Yeah, but then we move over to the men's side here. Like I said, right when you thought that, oh wow, that can't get much better. Three women fighting for the 3 podium spots. That's a great biathlon race. They all performed at the best of their ability on the last shooting, all shooting clean. we go over to the men's race, which seemed like a walk in the park for Vetle Kristiansen, and he kind of choked a little bit. But, you know, it sucks for him, but it made it better for us because we had, I mean, like we had nine to 11. We had 11 athletes who were still in contention for the podium going to the last shooting, which I can't remember off the top of my head last time that was the case. And then to have five of them fight on the last lap, just super cool. Two of them being, I know, Dale and Jacqueline, who, man, if you couldn't have, you couldn't have convinced me to put money on them to shoot clean in that last standing.
Yeah, I think in that last lap too, it kind of, in a way, it felt like it was just a race for the Norwegians, and then Strelo and Jacqueline were going to get dropped at some point. That's kind of what happened, but it was still, you know, super exciting to see Kristiansen miss and have the race kind of come back together. But even, you know, past that first group of five, the rest of the athletes from Jacomel in sixth all the way down to even Rastiguias in 10th really wasn't that far, you know, that far apart in the results. And just seeing everyone so close and making the shooting that much more of an impact in the race rather than just someone like Johannes Tingesbo in previous years being able to get away with two, maybe three misses in a pursuit and still win by 30 to 45 seconds. You know, biathlon has a different feel on the men's side this year, and it's fun to watch.
Yeah, it is really exciting. I mean, Bo is still obviously our overall leader. He's very dominant right now, but he definitely, he leaves the door open, especially on the skiing side, where other people can sort of sneak in there and have some good weekends. You know, one person who I really thought was going to have, who's going to take advantage of this opportunity that Bo is providing this season was Ligrid. And he is sort of like really, I don't want to say tanking. I mean, he's still obviously doing great in the overall. He's had some good races, but I mean, last year, if the leader, who probably would have been Bo, choked on the last shooting and, you know, someone was within, and Ligrid was within a couple seconds of him on the range, I mean, you would have thought Ligrid would have cleaned and then taken that race, but Ligrid choked on that last shooting with two misses, ends up finishing in 14th, going from like, oh man, I want to see the progression charts here, but I'm pretty sure he went from like top five to like 14th after that shooting. But yeah, sixth. He was sixth into shooting with, you know, all that other pack, and then ends up finishing 14th. So yeah, Ligrid's really, it's tough because, I mean, they left Kristiansen, and we're going to talk about Kristiansen more later, but they left Kristiansen off the team in Ruhpolding, or sorry, in Oberhof. But I mean, I don't know, like Ligrid's the one for me who's kind of on the chopping block, even though he's ranked fourth overall. Kristiansen's currently ranked sixth after his good weekend. I don't know.
I think with the Norwegian team, it's got to go off of recent form, and Ligrid's shooting percentages are down from last year. His ski speed is down, and you know, with both of those going down in biathlon, that's really not a recipe for success or improvement. So I think it's got to be a new kind of feeling for him competing and not being at that level that he's used to being at on the range or on the skis. So hopefully maybe during the break before World Champs, he can figure some stuff out, but it's not looking so great for him. I feel like he's kind of in the hot seat right now.
Yeah. Also, I want to give a shout out to sort of the unsung hero of this whole pursuit is Eustace Strelo. I mean, this guy's 27. I remember racing him Junior Worlds a couple years ago when I was there. He's my age. And he was good as a junior, you know, a German, a young German, obviously always in contention for a medal. But, you know, he's been sort of that IBU Cup quality guy for the last couple of years. And then suddenly, you know, the last 2 years, he got like a couple of races in 21, a couple of races in 22, and then got a lot of experience last year, almost the whole season. But this year, man, he's really, really stepped up his performance. He's He's shooting 93% this year. Skiing took a huge step up. His shooting times also way faster. So just really rose to the occasion, and now he definitely got a podium earlier in the season. Second place the first race of the year in Östersund, but really, you know, two top tens in Rupp holding in front of the home crowd. That's, you know, good for him. And unfortunately he entered that last lap with, like the fastest skiers you could have entered the last lap with, except for maybe Samuelsson, and ends up holding his own and really stuck with them that whole lap. Yeah. They were probably dogging a little bit, playing more tactics and less, you know, brute force, but you know, good for him coming in fifth in Rupp holding and giving the fans something to cheer about, because the other Germans who've.
Yeah, it started off pretty well for most of the Germans, but then did not end so hot. But I think if you're, to go back to Strelo a little bit, if you're a young athlete listening to this or, you know, getting into the sport of biathlon and you want to learn some things, he's a great athlete to watch on the range, how he composes himself. You know, he's competing with the best in the world in that pursuit at the top of the race the whole time, and he hardly looked flustered at all, especially at home with the German crowds and there being so much pressure on the German athletes to have success at home. I think he's just a good athlete for younger athletes to kind of look up to and watch during the races and see how he does things, how he handles different situations, and he's a really fun athlete to watch.
Ethan, you're 100% correct. So I'm quickly going through his trajectory. As a junior, he had a couple top 10s at junior cups and stuff like that. Never went top 10 at junior worlds, including his last year at junior worlds. His best race was 16th. His other races were in the 30s, but he stuck with it. Also shooting 80% as a junior, which actually for juniors is not bad, but 80% as a junior, stuck with it, got some IBU cup opportunities, bumped his shooting up to 88% on average and the IBU cup. It got some podiums, and then made his debut. Did not start off with a good World Cup debut, you know, one of those guys for placing in the 40s or so. And then over time just makes his way up to the teens, and then this year just continuing to progress. So yeah, you're right. He is a really good representation of someone that, you know, is chugging away, staying focused, seeing small improvement year over year. And really, you know, he knew that he had to get his shooting percent up, and now he's honestly at 93%. That's elite. I'll have to go take a look at some of the season records here. That might be our best shooter of the season so far. Let's see, total hit rate. Yeah, he's currently the best shooter in the men's field this year with 93.6%, beating out Sebastian Stalder, Heidi Leitinen. So yeah, he saw that was an area that he could improve in his game and stepped up. And yeah, his skiing still needs to improve, but he's got time, and the good shooting will help with that consistency for the results at least. So all right, no misses this week. I mean, everything was just great. So we'll just keep going with the good times. Just when we thought the women's field could not get any closer, suddenly, biathlon gods proved us wrong. Oh, man. I'm looking at this graph that they have on Real Biathlon, and it is just absolutely incredible to see Tanderfold and Brezza Boucher are like literally 10 points, 9 points separated. Vitozzi's right there behind them, like 50 points. And then a little bit of gap between Oyberg, Preuss, and Simone. But I mean, we know that Elvira Oyberg, Julia Simone, Preuss, like all three of those, they're literally one weekend away, like a good sprint pursuit back to back, maybe a good individual from being right up there with those other three. So yeah, this is freaking awesome.
And it's interesting with it going into, you know, an altitude weekend in Antholz, where, you know, the faster skiers will get a little bit of an edge, and you really have to kind of think about it a little bit more coming into the range, and there's just a little bit more going on in your head and in your body that you don't really feel at lower altitudes. And I think that might shake the standings up a little bit. Like, someone could have a bad weekend and fall a few spots. But like you said, if one of those athletes from like a Vera Oiberg down to even like Lou Jeanmonod or not in an eighth, if they have a great weekend with individual sprint pursuit, they could be find themselves competing for the top three by the end of the weekend.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I really like Lou Jeanmonod. I want to see her join this party up here. But so, yeah, you mentioned we're going to altitude, and this is actually really interesting because Soldier Hollow and Canmore are also at altitude to finish out the season. So, yeah, they go Anholtz, which is altitude, off a break before World Champs in Novo Mesto, which is not at altitude. And then we go to Oslo, not at altitude, and then Soldier Hollow, Canmore, two altitude venues. So we got three, I guess, and the World Champs doesn't count for points, unfortunately, which is stupid, in my opinion. But we have three altitude venues coming up out of literally four world like point scoring races left. So does that mean that maybe some of our more fit, fast skiers are going to sort of pull away a little bit? What do you think?
I would kind of lean that way, where the faster skiers will have a little bit of an edge just because they won't, the effects of the altitude won't impact their performance as much, and they'll kind of be able to stick to their normal pace and routine and how they do things a little bit more than those athletes that aren't quite as fast on skis. But if you aren't one of those athletes that can ski super fast and you really focus on just hitting your targets, that's going to go so far for you not having to do penalty loops or not having time added onto your time already, and give you a huge confidence boost that you're in this race that you maybe didn't expect yourself to be in as much. And it just creates a really interesting dynamic. And I like that they put an individual in Anholtz, because I think that's going to really, you know, shake things up with how different athletes are approaching the race and their strategies and kind of game plans going into it.
Yeah, that's a really good point. That individual is going to, yeah, throw a monkey wrench into kind of what I just said. Looking at the top six here, I mean, Tandervold has expressed many times that she does not feel comfortable at altitude, and maybe this is just like a safety blanket sort of, like, if you say you're not good at something, you can't let yourself down, maybe. But I mean, she's expressed many times that she has troubles at altitude. Justine Brezat Boucher crushed everyone in Lenzerheide, so that she doesn't have excuse. Lisa Vitozzi lives in Anholtz. Really, my question is, like, Elvira Oiberg, Preuss, Simone, you know, they're on the back half of this top six. Are they going to be able to step up? I think Simone has shown that she can do it. Oiberg had, you know, good races in Beijing, which was a high altitude venue. I'm curious to see what Preuss can do. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, having that individual in Anholtz is actually going to throw a monkey wrench in there, because of these top six, I kind of actually have Vitozzi and Preuss with the advantage on the range, I think, for some good points in the pursuit, in the individual.
Yeah, and Vitozzi right now is fourth overall in shooting percentage, with Lou Jeanmonod fifth overall in shooting percentage on the women's, and Preuss is right there in sixth, and they're all only separated by 0.6 of a percent, which, wow. You know, at that point, it's, you know, covering your eyes and throwing a dart at who you think is going to have the better race, but you got to kind of lean towards Vitozzi, who's at home. This is where she trains all year, where she goes home during the breaks to train, and she's done all her time trials here getting ready for the season over the Christmas break. But then you have the added pressure of being at home, where her fans are going to be expecting her to win every race, be fighting for the podium, you know, at the end of the season, stand on the top with the crystal globe. And, you know, she's shown that she can handle the pressure in the past. But I think that in the past, that pressure has come in that competition between her and Dorothea Veer. But now Veer is not really in the picture as much, just because she's been sick and not racing consistently on the World Cup. Mm-hmm. So I think it might be a different kind of home pressure for Vitozzi, where you know, she's kind of the main show. And although the men have had a really good weekend in RuPolding as well, but on the women's side, it's kind of her show now. So that first individual is going to be an awesome race to watch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So we have individuals in Oslo after world champs. And then that is it for the individuals. Obviously an individual at world champs as well. But that's it for individuals and points in the individual. I'm just thinking actually right now, who is leading the individual globe? Oh, that's Lisa Vitozzi. Okay. Followed closely by Preuss, Voigt, and Knoten, who actually, you know, kind of backing up here, interesting stat there with the shooting percentages right now for qualified athletes, because there's a couple people on this list that have like one race, so we don't count them. But for like, you know, qualified athletes, of the top five who have like raced the full season and shot like all their, you know, and during all their races, of those top five, we have three of them in the top, four of them in the top 10, right? Because Voigt is mm-hmm. in the top 10, mm-hmm. I think. Four of them in the top 10. That's kind of crazy. Usually, you know, I feel like in the last couple of years, there always used to be this like, oh, are you a good shooter or are you a good skier? But the level has really stepped up. You really got to be a fast skier and a fast shooter these days, or a good shooter these days. You know, you no longer have those people that are like individual specialists that you can almost guarantee that the overall leader or the favorite is going to have at least one or two misses, and someone who really knows how to shoot clean can maybe get an individual win here and there. I feel like the top athletes, they're hitting every target and they're skiing fast, and they're not, doesn't matter what the format is. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think a good example of that is Elvira Oiberg this season, where she's third overall in ski speed, but has not hit very many targets. And that's just kind of bumped her out of that conversation for, you know, she's sitting fourth overall right now. So she's not quite at that same level on the range as everyone else. And you can see that impact. Whereas if she was, you know, shooting the same as Vitozzi and Lou Jeanmonod at 93%, I think she'd be miles ahead of the rest of the women with her ski speed, but she's just not there yet. And yeah, we talked about this before, where if she figures out on the range and has an amazing weekend and continues to ride that high the remainder of the season, she could find herself at the top of the overall standings.
Yeah, the kind of an interesting post here. I mean, when you look at her worst races this season, for her worst races came in the individual for one, and then a pursuit, this most recent pursuit. But someone put an interesting post on the biathlon subreddit where they calculated all the points this year, but did the two dropped results like the IBU used to do, which I personally think they should bring back. But if you drop everyone's two worst results, it doesn't move Oiberg into like, you know, first or something, but if you can neglect that 39th in the first individual and then the 18th in the last race, she comes within 100 points of Tandervold, who's still in the lead. So right now she's about 160 back, but if you can drop her two worst results, she becomes within 100 back. And we know that a win is 90 points. So it just goes to show you there that, you know, of the one individual that we've done this season, she did absolutely terribly, and it's holding her back in the overall, to kind of make your point. But yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think after, we'll save our predictions for world champs until after Anholtz, but I'm getting some ideas right now as to who I like for world champs, but we'll see how Anholtz goes. But yeah, we can move on, because I think we're going to talk about some more related stuff to what we just brought up later. Mm-hmm. All right. I mean, honestly, I wanted to start with this. I when you originally wrote the draft for this episode, you put this one in our first shot, but those pursuit races were too great. I had to move it. But suddenly, Campbell Wright from the USA has entered the chat And he does so in a huge way. And yeah, like you said at the start of the pod, like great pursuit, or as you said at the beginning of the pod, great relay to start it off, you know, good relay leg there. That was, I believe, I just got to double check here, but I am pretty sure that was his very first relay that he's ever competed in, because first of all, he never had any other team members. and then the other times that he raced, did they get lapped? No. No, for some reason I thought, maybe they did get lapped.
I don't think he raced the first ones in Östersund.
He was on the... Yeah, they got lapped in Oberhof, so did not get to participate. He was on the team.
Okay.
Oh, and he did participate in... he was an anchor leg in Östersund, where he didn't have a penalty loop, but he didn't shoot super well. But anyway, yeah. Let's just throw the kid out front. See what he can do. And not only does he do well, but he steals the show. I mean, everyone from all the Twitter and Reddit and everything I've been following, everyone is obviously just so Team Campbell. He's has such a great personality, just a, like, you know, just joyous person to be around. So obviously, you know, that's exciting. But also, Ethan, the dude's racing with a little bit of swagger here. I mean, who does this guy think he is? 21 years old, coming into the World Cup relay and you know, telling Germany on home snow what to do. Like, who does this kid think he is?
I know he's still a junior. He's coming off World Juniors win last year. When I saw him telling the German athlete to go ahead on the first lap in the first leg, I was like, oh gosh, like race over, like he's gonna blow it in the standing shooting. And he held it together and he absolutely threw down the last lap. He's such a fun athlete to watch because you can see the emotion and the passion he has for the sport while he's competing. You know, after he tags off or finishes a race, you can see how invested he is into it. And I think that's going to be something that the U.S. team is going to really appreciate throughout the course of the season, kind of bring a little bit of life and kind of raise the spirits of everyone a little bit, especially if he continues to have good performances starting relays. I think one interesting thing is there's a single mixed relay coming up in Antholz, and him and, you know, depending on how the U.S. decides to make the teams, him and Deidre could do pretty good and surprise some people, I think, in the single mixed relay.
That, yeah, I mean, if Campbell keeps his, both of them actually, they're both kicking butt right now, and they can hit the targets, I don't see any reason why that can't be a sleeper pick. But yeah, I mean, like, and for those who know Campbell, like he really is, like how he portrays himself in these situations where he's, you know, in front of the cameras, it really is the way that he is. I don't know if that's the best way to put that, but he's just a very genuine person. He really loves life. He loves, you know, he loves playing with this crazy situation that he's in, being a professional biathlete from New Zealand. You know, he's just really enjoying life. But I've seen, you know, I've been working with Campbell for a couple of years now, and I know that he is at his best when he is in those situations and he's hyped up and he's letting it all out, you know, and he's just really riding the momentum and the vibe of the situation. That's when he's at his best. And what's really cool, which I think something you alluded to too, was, yeah, hopefully this is a way to sort of ignite and spark the whole team. You know what I mean? Like, you got one person on the team doing well with results. That's one thing, but you know, that's, you know, we've seen that a ton where, you know, one person has good results, but everyone else is just like, you know, like that's what they do. But hopefully just like the vibe that, yeah, he brings to the team and the excitement can get people sort of have their heads pop off the pillow a little bit in the morning to be like, all right, we're back out here again. This is going to be fun. And, you know, he's the kind of guy that can raise all ships. But yeah, no, I agree. And like, yeah, speaking of Deidre, like we can't overlook her. I mean, top 10 in Lenzerheide. I mean, we mentioned that a couple of weeks ago when we did our period one podcast, but yeah, Deidre is really stepped up this year, and really cemented herself as the leader on the team. And she's not to like Claire and Susan level yet, but she's definitely progressing to that, you know, sort of, okay, you can kind of not guarantee, but you can write Deidre in for like a solid top 30, good race, maybe top 10 kind of athlete. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Has like a very consistent average and a high floor, but that's that ceiling and the potential for a great race is always there.
Yeah, absolutely. And this year, in terms of her results, everything's trending up. You know, we're not done with the full season yet, but if she continues on this pace, she will have her most successful season of her career, with being in the top 40 over 50% of the time. That's points. You know, you're gaining World Cup points in almost every other race. Whereas last year she was only in the top 40, 30% of the time. So every third race she might get points. Now it's every other race she might get points. And also she's raised her top 30s, top 20s, and obviously her top 10s. So, you know, there's a chance to earn even more points on top of that. Just kind of looking at her other stats here, looks like she really hasn't had too much movement in her shooting, but it's her skiing that's picked up a little bit this year, which is cool to see. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I agree. I mean, a single mixed relay with Deidre and Campbell, that would be pretty interesting. Also, the fact that there's at World Champs we have the single mixed relay, and I think the mixed relay are on different days, so mm-hmm. people can participate in both, because having a single mixed relay with if we can do a single mixed relay, So at World Champs, we open with the mixed relay on the first day, and then later in the week is the single mix. So if we can open with a mixed relay of Campbell, Sean, Deidre, and Kelsey, like that's actually a pretty strong crew. Kelsey's really good, you know, on the range. She can guarantee that we're going to stay in it there. And then, you know, if the others, like if Campbell can continue being the quote unquote leader and, you know, make attacks where it's necessary, like I think we got a pretty good crew for the mixed relay. And then, yeah, maybe we're about to see this weekend as like a little test run for World Champs. What could a Deidre and Campbell single mix look like? Could mm-hmm. be interesting.
And even if, you know, the U.S. decides to go with Sean over Campbell or whatever, you know, shakes out there with who's racing a little better, you know, the men's relay and Rupp Holding didn't end with Campbell's first leg. Like Sean was leading the second leg after the standing shooting, and he stayed in the mix and put the U.S. in a like amazing spot that they haven't been in years probably. And then Vincent on the last leg shooting clean, no spare rounds, is awesome to see from another younger athlete who's kind of breaking into the World Cup ranks for the U.S. And then yeah, the men could kind of turn some heads a little bit in the coming relays the rest of the season.
Yeah. I mean, unfortunately on our leg three, Jake had two penalty loops and prone, but you take his shooting out of that, the other three guys, one spare round. And that was Sean in his standing. Campbell mm-hmm. 0+0, Vincent 0+0. So yeah, it's, and then also, I mean, don't forget that we also have Max, who started mm-hmm. off the season with a really, really high level relay. Man, it would be so cool to see, like, it seems like this year, yeah, we've been lapped at least once. We've been on the penalty loop a lot in relays, but I feel like this year, every single relay starts off with something great and then just ends terribly. And I almost feel like we're like due, like, when is it going to be the day that our men's relay team puts it all together? And even if the thing that like is not great, it's like someone going 0+3, 0+3 and actually avoiding the penalty loop, but you know, still having spares, like whatever. But if like, what, Yeah, I'm just like waiting for the day that we have like Campbell have an absurdly good first leg, tags off to Sean, who, you know, who's famous or not famous, but just has had a history of having good first legs. A day where Maxime can have his good day, a day where Jake is, you know, hitting the target and skiing as fast as he can, a day where Vincent, you know, is stepping up and doing what he does on the range. Like, I mean, I know I just named five guys there, but like really all five of those guys deserve to be on the relay team. So it's, yeah, I just feel like we're due. And I made a joke to someone earlier I was on the phone with just saying like, hey, we're saving our best for world champs. So we'll just leave it at that, I guess.
Yeah.
All right, Ethan, I am tired of talking about Norway. I'm tired of talking about Germany. I'm tired of talking about France. Thank God Italy stepped up and they finally gave us something to talk about. No, only joking, obviously. Vitozzi's been really good all year. Gio Camille's had a good season. But, I mean, they had two podiums this weekend. And the Italian men, speaking of relay teams, like, what the heck do the Italian men think they're doing on the podium? Two consecutive relays. And yeah, then looking further down the list, like some of the other athletes that you don't normally, you know, associate with the top of the field, they are also having some good races. So I don't know, just everything seems like it's kind of pointing up for Italy right now as we're going into their home World Cup.
Yeah. And having just kind of talked about the state of the U.S. men's team, it feels similar on the men's side for Italy, where they have, you know, their star in Giacomel. They have an experienced athlete in Hoffer who, you know, missed the last year due to health and surgery and injuries and stuff. But they have young athletes that are exciting and kind of figure learning the ropes of the World Cup and how to find success. But it feels like they're kind of like a step or two above the U.S. with everything that we discussed in a couple minutes ago. But it's awesome to see Italy competing at the top of the relays on the men's side and having individual performances on men's and women's and the men's and women's races that, you know, are super fun to watch, and they're in it. It's awesome to see them in it every single race.
Yeah. And I'm a huge fan of Tommaso Giacomel. I think the guy is, honestly, I was a little surprised because I listened to his post-race interview after his podium in the sprint. And, you know, the guy comes across the line. He's got snot all over his face. Huge fist pump to the crowd when he sees that he is in first. Unfortunately, just gets dethroned by, you know, Christensen, who started right behind him. But the dude is pumped. He shows a lot of emotion. He looks fun. And then in the post-race interview, he almost seemed bummed. And I wonder if that was just sort of like coming off that high of like he thought he won, but then, you know, obviously something completely out of his control, you know, knocked him down to second. He thought he was in line for his first win on the World Cup. But like, anyway, I love this sort of like young emotion that we're seeing on the World Cup right now with Gio Camel, with Hartvig, with Stalder, with Campbell. I know those are all dudes, but like we see that. Like, I mean, Elvira, she's been on the top five the last couple of years as a U25. Lou is great junior, got it, although not junior, but a great U25 athlete. Some of the Norwegians are younger. So I don't know. I just feel like there's a lot of like youth talent, but not just talent, but like youth emotion, you know? Mm-hmm. So yeah, that's really cool. And also Didier Bienaz is also having an awesome season this year. He like burst onto the scene a couple seasons ago. Like his first couple of races were super strong. And then he fell back a little bit. That's right. He had some really good ski times. A seventh ski time in the Hochfilzen pursuit back in 2020 when he was like 20 years old. Yeah. So yeah, he burst onto the scene, but then he sort of fell off a little bit. And then Gio Camel sort of became that like young Italian to look at. But then suddenly Didier Bienaz is back this year. He's really stepped up his game, specifically in the skis, because his shooting has not improved too much. But last year he went from being like just about average to now being like almost 3% faster than the average skier, which is huge. and yeah, has been almost in the top 20, like almost a race, every race. So, yeah, just, it's really cool to see. I agree. It seems like Italy and the US are a little bit in the same boat when it comes to like world, not necessarily World Cup performance, but, sort of in a little bit of a rebuilding phase, as you know, Doro's getting a little bit older. Lisa Vitozzi is, you know, coming into her, like these are her prime years where she should be winning. And then, yeah, with the guys like Hoffer and Dominic Vindish, who retired a few seasons ago. So yeah, they're definitely a young team and obviously eyeing the Olympics coming up. So, they're really banking on, you know, everyone that we just mentioned stepping up. And I was trying to furiously pull up, the results here, but I did hear. So, and if you're looking past the World Cup and you're looking down at the IBU Cup, someone, an Italian, just won an IBU Cup race this last weekend while all eyes were on Rupp Holding for the World Cup. And she is getting called up to the World Cup for Anholtz. And I'm trying to quickly pull it up, see who it was. It was Sarah Scatolo, who came in second on the IBU Cup. What did she do in the Mass Start 60? No, it wasn't there. So I think Scatolo might be making her World Cup debut. It would help if I spelled her name correctly. Scatolo, not Scatolo. Yeah, never been on the World Cup before. Came in second in Ridnown in the sprint. So making her World Cup debut on home snow this weekend. So yeah, another 20 years old. She was at Kazakhstan last year. That's how I recognize her name. Didn't do much in Kazakhstan, but she did win at the Junior Cup a few times last year. Lots of wins actually on the Junior Cup last year. So again, another young bright star for Italy that is going to be making her debut and we'll see what she's got. But yeah, I think really the thing that separates Italy from the US is like the number one for Italy could win. Like Vitozzi, obviously, Giacomel kind of proved that this weekend. Number one could win. Can our US person, can they win? Sure. But that would be a real head turner, you know? So I think that's really what separates us in terms of performance. They may be a little bit ahead of us that way, but I think, yeah, you're right. In terms of like a rebuilding and look into the future, we're in very similar spots right now. All right. We can't ignore this great story. And Christensen even mentioned it in his post-race interview. How Christensen gets booted from the team to give the youngsters a chance. Now, no one wants to root against, you know, a biathlete. I don't want to root against Jano Lovbotin, but the dude had a really tough World Cup debut. And unless he just absolutely murders everyone on the World Cup or on the IBU Cup for the next couple of races, I don't think we're going to see him again on the World Cup, because in Norway, unfortunately, you get one shot. And if you don't make it work, you don't make it. It's not going to happen. Christensen gets his return to the World Cup, and what does he do by, you know, giving the big middle finger to the team that left him off the team? He just goes and wins the race. So you can't deny the dramatic Hollywood-esque story that is there. But what do you think about Christensen's performance this weekend? Like, are you impressed? Are you like, what are you thinking?
I think it's kind of, it was the, I'm impressed because he had a longer break for the holidays and a lot of the other athletes, and having raced on the World Cup for so long at a high level, you know, being dropped from the team surely must affect his kind of mental state. But they put him right into the last leg of the relay to start the weekend, which shows they still have, you know, some confidence in him. Although Johannes Thingnesbø did not race the relay for Norway, but still Christensen the past couple of years has kind of been the new anchor leg for them, which is interesting, and we're not the ones who make the calls there, but he really hasn't ever let them down in the relays. He's always been an athlete that shoots well in the range and can then back it up when he slips a little bit with his ski speed. And watching him race, you always have confidence in him that he's going to do what he needs to do to get the job done. And I think he did that and then some this weekend, especially having been dropped from the Oberhof World Cup.
Yeah, I honestly, it's impressive he won, but in my opinion, I was not super impressed with his performance this weekend because, he lost the pursuit. I mean, he had that in the bag, but you could tell he was getting a little shaky there at the last shooting and then had two misses. And the fact that he was so far ahead is like, hey, two penalty loops and you're still fighting for the win. And, then I think everything gets overshadowed with the, oh man, that was such an amazing race. But the dude was up by 40 seconds on that field. First of all, one miss on the World Cup is tough. At that level, you got to be shooting clean. But then two misses, he's lucky that he had that huge gap. And then also in the relay too, he had some misses in the relay where he was up by so long or so much over the next team. He had two misses in prone and a miss in standing. He was able to clear them with his spare rounds, but up by that much and, being a person who's ranked sixth overall, I kind of expect them to hit that target. So, I don't know. I'm good for him. I'm glad. I'm a huge Christensen fan ever since the Beijing, before the Beijing games, but the relay, talking about Iceman and being the closer, that relay in Beijing where Russia was up by forever and Christensen just comes in and 5 out of 5 makes this immaculate comeback to win the Olympics, that is in my biathlon fandom, that's top 5 greatest moments, which is kind of crazy that it just belongs to this random Norwegian guy against the Russian dude. But I thought that was just a miraculous race and one of the best races I've ever seen because of that. But I don't know, I want to see more from him. I wanted to see more from him on that last lap when he's fighting with mm-hmm. with Bo and Dalle. I don't think anyone was going to give you have Johannes Tingisbo, you have Johannes Dalle. Dalle's a really fast skier. So in my mind, when I saw them all leaving the range, I kind of had Dalle winning that last mm-hmm. lap. And then I guess, Christensen did come in second. So I don't know. I just maybe I just have it in my head that he's supposed to be super dominant. And I'm looking at, I saw these very poignant misses, these very specific misses on the range that it just kind of maybe rubbed me the wrong way. But I'm looking at his stats right now, and this is absolutely wild. Over last year, his shooting percentage has improved, not like ton, but it has technically. His skiing has improved, even against top 10 athletes. His skiing has at least remained the same. His shooting times, they got a little bit slower by 1 second, but whatever. And he is just on an absolute tear when it comes to performance compared to last year. But he gets dropped off the team. I don't know. It's just kind of crazy.
That's
I guess last year. Yeah. Last year he did come in third overall, and now he's currently in sixth. So mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, that's an interesting point that another little tidbit to add to the, the story of him getting dropped. But like you said, it wasn't really his dominant performance we were kind of expecting and anticipating watching the pursuit. But that last lap, it's hard when Dalle is skiing kind of lights out this season. And we all know, and the announcers or the commentators kept saying, Johannes Tingisbo is not going to win this race if it comes down to the last 100, 200 meters, which it essentially did. But maybe Christensen just needed a full weekend of racing, and with that ski speed being up, like we talked about earlier in the podcast with the on the women's side, that ski speed could come in handy in Antholtz. And if he continues, or if he gets back to his previous shooting form in years past, and that confident, dominant athlete on the range that we know he can be, you know, maybe he finds himself fourth or third in the Norwegian team, which then puts you third or fourth overall in the World Cup. You never know.
Yeah. I don't know. He can win me back by having another good weekend this weekend. All right. We don't really need a spare round because everything we shot at today was a hit because we're so good. But hey, let's do a spare round for the hell of it. Coming up with one right off the top of my head. Dorothea Veer. A lot of people have been asking on, a lot of people have been commenting on my various social media comments on YouTube and Instagram and whatnot and tweeting at me. Where's Dorothea Veer? For all I hear is that she's sick. She's prepping for world champs. Like she's getting to a point in her career where she's choosing to focus on a few really good races. And it seems like she's letting the potential for the overall World Cup go. She's making a comeback though for Anholtz. I got that news officially. Saw that officially. So Ethan, where does Dorothea Veer stack up after her break?
Hold on. I'm just pulling up her stats for this season so far. I think coming into Antholtz, having been sick, not racing, might not be the stellar performance that we want her to have coming back, just because her ski speed is down. Her shooting percentage is actually up from last season. But I think it might be kind of, you know, it's always hard to come back after you've been sick. So maybe she doesn't quite blow all of our socks off this first, you know, race circuit back in Antholtz. But I think at World Champs, if she plays her cards right, stays healthy, training goes well, at World Champs, we could really see her, you know, take form and start competing for podiums every single race like we've seen her do for so many years.
Mm-hmm. So she raced in Östersund, Hochfeldsand, and Lenzerheide to finish out the first trimester, and then did not come back for the German Oberhof and Ruhpolding. And she didn't start the pursuit in Lenzerheide either. So her best race of the year so far is 14th place, which is, you know, it's not too much different than what she has been kind of doing these last couple of years. But the last couple of years, she's good for like a couple podiums and, you know, even a couple wins each season. So the one thing, the one bright spot is that her shooting is actually improved this year, believe it or not, because she's always been a good shooter, but she is currently posting 90% shooting. I agree. I mean, her skiing has taken a huge hit this year. I agree that also coming back after the break, it might be hard for her to kind of reassimilate to World Cup racing. I'm going to, because we have the individual, I'm going to peg her at top, between 10th and 15th. So top 15, but I don't think she's going to be top 10.
I think that's a good assessment and good place to put her for the first race back.
Yeah. That would actually be really good. I think she's going to do it in the shooting. Her skiing's going to let her down a little bit. But yeah, first race back, if she's right there, then I think that'll be good. I don't think she'll do as well in the mass start if she gets the start there, which I think she's due for. She's in the top 30 right now. Yeah, currently ranked 29th. If she comes in 15th in the individual, she'll get a start spot in the mass start. But yeah. All right, well, we'll see. And then when it happens, I'm just going to say I told you. So you heard it here first. All right, everyone. We really appreciate you listening to this episode of the podcast. Yeah, like I said at the beginning of the show, go find the YouTube video for this pod and go keep the conversation going there. As always, you know, you can feel free to reach out to me on the socials for conversation on other platforms, whatever you fancy. But yeah, until next time, thanks for listening, and we'll see you.